Welcome to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your host, motivational speaker Greg Dwyer. Be sure to check out Greg at www.gregdwyer.com. That's www.gregdwyer.com. Now on to our show. Take it away, Greg.
It is an amazing day, and my guest today does not need an introduction. It is the amazing Kreskin. Kreskin, thank you for being on the broadcast today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, I hear a lady in the background introducing the show and so forth. Is she a British gal? Because it almost sounds like she has an accent. I love different parts of the world, you know, but I don't know if that, you've noticed that at all.
You know, for somebody like you that has done, what, a million miles all over the world, you probably know every accent.
Well, I know they announced 2 years ago before the pandemic hit. At that moment, the airline industry figured that I have flown 3.5 million miles.
Wow. Wow. So I read that in your book, and I want to follow up with that.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, it's great to talk to you, because the last time we saw each other, was it in Connecticut?
Yeah, it was in Connecticut 2 weekends ago, and it was a wonderful weekend. But I want to ask you about the travel, because I know you've been all over the world. How did you maintain that on planes and trains and hotel rooms, you know, all these years? What was your secret for just being able to do that and still do that even today?
You know, it's a very good question, because today I've got a level with you, and I'm very honest about this, because people are aware of the crazy schedule I've had all my career, but it's more difficult airline travel than it was a few years ago, because you have now delays, you've got scenes taking place on planes and what have you. Fortunately, I haven't had to suffer through this, but I have not taken as many flights in the past year and a half as I have, and out of the country is a problem, because as you probably have heard, there are certain countries where it's not a comfortable situation to go into those countries without special permission and so forth. Now, understand that my schedule was so constant at times New Zealand, five and a half years in New Zealand, but my schedule was kind of dramatic, because I decided when I was touring New Zealand that I wanted to be home. I needed to be home in the States a certain amount of time, so I came home every Tuesday and flew back to New Zealand every Thursday, because I needed the 24 hours to accommodate and cover some of the other issues that were going on with my work and my writing and what have you. So I love traveling. Years ago, now it's no longer the case, but years ago I flew on all the flights, almost all the flights, in the cockpit with the pilots, because they enjoyed talking about to me. They wanted to know my schedule, experiences I had, and so forth. But of course, legally and for safety security reasons, now you just can't do that today. It's a whole different world, the flight world. I wonder how comfortable some of the pilots feel, because I have police in my family. I have great. I've done many years of work with law enforcement, and I don't know how, to be honest with you, Greg, today you can be a policeman. I don't know how in the United States you can handle such a thing.
Yeah, and you know, when I met you in 81 till today, I mean, the world, the United States has changed so much. It's not the same world, you know. So we met in 1981. It was in New Fairfield, Connecticut. I was in high school.
Was it 81?
Yeah, 81. Yeah. So what happened was, you invited people on stage, and I'm somewhat of a ham. So I went on stage, and you had like 10 or 12 chairs, and you were going through hypnosis with folks, and some people were leaving and going back to their chairs, and little by little there was two people, and then eventually there was just me and you. And you were giving me suggestions, and I don't know how long I was there. I'll never forget it. And then at the end, I gave you my business card, because at the time I was doing magic in high school. Do you still do hypnosis? What's your understanding of hypnosis? I really, because I have some friends that are hypnotists, and they wanted me to ask you this question. Do you still do it? Do you believe in it? What's your philosophy about hypnosis?
I still, when I do a full evening show that runs two and a half hours, and the latter part of the program deals with the power of hypnotic suggestion and so forth. But my name has become part of the history books in hypnosis in recent years, because some years ago I was involved in a case this is maybe 20, 30 years ago, but it got a considerable amount of publicity because I came to the conclusion. Now my degree is in psychology. I have a doctorate from Seton Hall University, what have you. But I wasn't going to school to become a psychologist. I was going part-time, and it took me 18 years to get my degree in psychology because they would only allow me to take four classes or what have you each year. And in some of the cases, I only attended maybe four classes in the entire year. But they said, because of your experience, your knowledge, and what have you, we want you to continue, and you deserve the degree you're receiving. But I came to the conclusion early in my career, something started to stink about hypnosis. Something smelled about it. I didn't like what I was smelling. I don't mean I was against hypnosis, but it just didn't seem like what it came to be. And finally, it's a very famous case. I could send you some of the details on it. But I was finally tried by a jury. And it's the only hypnosis trial in the United States history that we know of that's of this type. Because I came to the conclusion that hypnosis does not exist, that there is no such thing as a hypnotic state or a hypnotic trance, and I got involved in quite a scenario. A hypnotist threatened to sue me and what have you. They won't sue me today because it would destroy their career. The publicity would destroy them. I can tell you this right now. But I showed the key regarding hypnosis is that what can you do with hypnosis that you cannot do without hypnosis? And there is nothing, whether it's anesthesia, whether it's clarity of memory and what have you. I was prepared, and in the courtroom case in New Jersey, which was an extraordinarily dramatic case, I took people that were there and brought them forward and caused them to have amnesia, to cause them to have anesthetic situations and what have you. And finally, when the trial was over, the judge threw the case out and said, "You hypnotist," because the hypnotist who sued me, she had as a professional therapist, a very fine therapist, as a witness to prove that I was wrong, that there was such a thing as a hypnotic case. Well, the case was finally thrown out by the judge and said, "This is a sideshow case because Kreskin has duplicated everything you folks associate with hypnosis and done it without putting people in special trances or what have you. But I believe in the power of suggestion." And I'm going to announce, by the way, Greg, for tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, because I make announcements to the press and on my cell phone. I do a podcast and what have you, and I'm making an extraordinarily dramatic announcement in which I'm going to invite people to participate in the experience. I'm going to offer, and I think it should be a very fascinating thing, because I'm going to offer people to experience some things that they may never thought that they would be able to experience in everyday life. I'm going to paralyze them. I'm going to offer to paralyze people. Now, I know there's not going to be any physical harm. I've done this in theaters, in auditoriums all over the world in the past 30, 40, 50 years when I've done full evening shows. In fact, they've already showed some newsreels of pictures at universities or outdoors. There were 40 students lying on the grass, paralyzed. Some of them couldn't speak because apparently they were in a hypnotic state, but they were not. They were wide awake, totally conscious in every way, shape, or form. This is going to be, I can't tell you folks listening in, I know a lot of you want to come. We'd like to have 40, 50, 60 people. I'd love to have a good crowd. It's going to be done indoors, for safety reasons, because I love this country. I'm very proud to be an American citizen. But the United States is no longer safe at night in cities. New York City is a disaster today. And my brother was a policeman 18 and a half years. I've worked on 150 crime cases. The United States is no longer safe, and that's true in California, it's true in Chicago, and certainly true in the United States. But what I'm going to do is people are going to, when they buy the tickets, to participate in this experience. It'll be about an hour and a half, 2 hour experience. But the latter part of my program, aside from the demonstration and entertainment side, is I'm going to take advantage, and I'm going to paralyze people so that while they're not in a trance or what have you, they will not be able to get out up off the floor. Skitch Henderson, a very, very famous a conductor years ago in television, was on the Tonight Show and what have you. He had me perform at one of his events, and it was a full house, and he was floored because in the middle of the performance, I had people on stage, sitting on stage, maybe about two dozen of them, and some of the musicians who were playing background music got up and left their position, so the music went out of key because they were so stunned. It turns out they realized that these people on stage, while they were not apparently in a trance, had lost all control over their limbs, and some were lying on the floor and what have you. So now it's going to be an opportunity for the public to participate in this, and I am looking forward to this with great excitement.
How do they get a hold of the tickets? Do they go on Facebook? How do they get a hold of your podcast? Because I see your podcast as well. So can you give us the information?
The podcast, the announcement is going to be tomorrow night at 8 o'clock and will be all week. However, please understand this, folks, because we're suddenly getting interest. And I don't want to say where, what cities, what states, what have you, because I want to do it here in the East Coast first. But there's other places that want to do it as a special event. They want to do it in Atlantic City as a special event. So I need a couple of weeks so I can announce exactly what city and what the event will take place and where you can get tickets and how you can get tickets. But give me a chance, because we never expected such a tremendous onslaught of interest in something like this. Now, don't misunderstand me. Some of the people who are bidding on this, I already was able to talk to in condition. So that's why they're asking for – no, I'm only joking. You got to add something. I say this wherever I travel. And I mean this now more than ever before, because I love the United States. I am proud to be a legitimate American citizen. If we can't stop laughing at ourselves, we are in tremendous trouble. And we are reaching that point in the United States. Comedians, Seinfeld, as a lot of people know, he announced this 2 or 3 years ago, and now it's no longer him. It's 7 or 8 other comedians. He said he will never work in a university in the United States again. He made it very clear. Yep. He's finished with universities, will never perform, because now most of the major universities – I'm not a comedian, but most major, if you're a comedian and you're going to appear there, you have to supply your entire routine so they can edit it. When I was a kid, and I'm 87 years old now and have not slowed down one iota. When I was a kid, it was the Second World War. I didn't have a television set. We didn't have television those days. I went across the street. I went to see the Westerns, and I'd see the news. And I can remember seeing news where there President Roosevelt was sitting, and it was like a press conference, and you could see he was laughing because he was slapping his leg laughing because Bob Hope was there mocking everything in sight. Humor is one of the greatest forces when we have trouble in the world.
Yes, I agree. And you were on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson over, what, 80 times? Like, what is it, 88?
88 times. They say less times, but the truth of the matter was it was 88 times. I have so many wonderful experiences that took place with him and Mike Douglas and on the list could go. But I have to tell a story that some of the
sure,
public
please.
Doesn't know about. You may already, or I may already know about this. When Steve Allen, who was a very fine comedic mind in broadcasting early in my career, early in television history, but when he left The Tonight Show and Johnny Carson took over, because Johnny Carson was the supreme master of The Tonight Show, Steve Allen went to Los Angeles and had a late night show, which all of college students, I was going to college then, but I was performing more than going to college. We all watched him at night and so forth, and he was there, and he heard about me because he had seen me on The Tonight Show and said, let's fly Kreskin in. I know he's always on with Johnny, but let's bring him in here. And I come out there, and I'm going to do the show that night. It's in a theater. It's a regular theater, but Steve Allen sits on one side of the stage, and when you walk on the other side, you walk across the stage to where Steve Allen is sitting and sit with him, and you're one of the guests or what have you. And I said to the crew, you know what? This is my first time meeting Steve Allen. I admired him all through the years. Maybe let me meet him first on camera. They said, Kreskin, that makes sense. That sounds like the way you would work. So Steve Allen introduces me. I walk out, and I want to tell you something, Greg, like a know-it-all. I am facing the camera. I'm walking towards Steve Allen, who's maybe 30 feet across the other side of the stage, but I'm looking at the camera, which I should have known by then, but hadn't learned enough by then. The camera's lights were extremely bright in the 1950s and 60s, and there's six lamps around the camera, and I'm walking at this blinding light, and they're moving the camera in front of me as I'm walking across the stage towards Steve Allen. When I get to Steve Allen, my eyesight is blinded. I trip over the dais and fall flat on my face. My family considers that the highlight of my career. But Steve Allen says, Kreskin, are you all right? I said, yes, Steve. I just got so careless. And a man who saw that a mentalist was going to be on The Tonight Show decided, even though he did his Tonight Show early in the afternoon, Johnny Carson decided to watch. And he saw that show. And he had a character on the show called Carnac the Magnificent. But eight weeks later, Carnac the Magnificent changed because as a result of what he saw happen, when Carnac came out from then on, he tripped over the table and almost fell flat on his face. It was because of that incident that I had happened to me. And the last show I did with Johnny, and it was I had 88 shows where I said, Johnny, I cannot tell you how I owe so much of my career to you because you even mention me when I'm not on the show. He says, oh, the mighty Carnac, is that the case? But I've had so many. Greg, my life has been, and I tell you this unabashedly, my life has been an adventure. That's all I can tell you. I can remember when I'm traveling in Saudi Arabia, the crew comes to me and says to me, and I don't know how many weeks or whether it's 2 months I've been there or what have you, but I'm coming back. They said, Kreskin, someone would like to meet you in your dressing room after the show. Is that all right with you? And I said, well, I'm not going to be giving any advice or anything, but no, they said, no, the person would just like to see you. And I said, that's fine, folks. So the show was over. I'm bowing to the audience. I go to my dressing room, and a woman is sitting there, and she motions to the chair to sit in the chair that's opposite the chair she's sitting on at a table in my dressing room. There's no one else backstage, no one at all, and I start to talk to her, and as I talk to her, I realize she's asking me about her future. Now, I'm not a fortune teller, but she's asked me, can I advise her? And it turned out it was the daughter of the king of Saudi Arabia.
Wow. Wow.
So the stories I can tell you are so exciting. And my career has been an adventure. that I could never give up. I mean, you know, this is my life. Things happen. Things have happened through the years that have been unpredictable, and yet they become exciting footnotes in what takes place on the stage. And you know, the people, Carson was extraordinarily loyal to me, and Mike Douglas, who was on for years. All these people have stories and stories they could tell, because even during the pandemic, when things were not going so well, I was performing still in the private homes of performers that said, you know, I don't do the TV show as much anymore. We need to gather together. And they invited me to come in and perform for like 30 of their guests, 40 of their guests, and what have you. So the world's been very good to me. And by the way, folks, I just want to mention to you, even though I have met, and he's been the first to admit it, I've met Greg before, I want to let you all know this. If I appear nationally on TV with Greg, I dare not read his thoughts on the air. No, I'm only joking, Greg.
Well, you read my mind. Letterman, you know, said this about you. He says he's the best mentalist in the world. He's not acting, and Kreskin should sue the producers of the TV show The Mentalist. Now, Dave's still alive.
Yeah,
he lives here in Connecticut. What was it like being on Letterman's show? What was that like being on Letterman's show?
Letterman was a pleasure to work with. He had a great sense of humor. He would sometimes kid me and mock me and what have you. But you know, this, you have to run with the. I love humorists. I perform with some of the greatest humorists in my life. Bob Hope would say to me, because he'd see me on flights, he'd say, "Kreskin," he says, "We're not in another world war. How come you were on a plane yesterday and you're on a plane today? And I understand you're flying somewhere tomorrow." Because, you know, Bob Hope was famous for all the flights he took during the Second World War. I mean, he was everywhere. I just have a much to be thankful for. The good Lord, has been good to me in my life, and I've wanted to share my success with others, because I couldn't do this without the support. Not many people know this, but do you know how I got interested in doing what I do for a living?
Living. No, tell the backstory. I'd love to hear it. I was
5 years old. I could not read then. My mother read to me comic books, and read files and piles of comic books. And a comic fascinated me, and a comic you may not know about because it may be earlier in your life, but the comic that intrigued me was called Mandrake the Magician. And Mandrake the Magician was written by Lee Falk, and he really was the magician. He had hypnotic abilities, he had telepathic abilities, and he fought crimes. And so when we went out and played, and good and bad, and crime story, and gangster stories, and so forth, I didn't play a detective. I played Mandrake, and my friends, you know, played either the criminals or the other supportive police or what have you, and what have you. And then something happened in third grade, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. My teacher, Miss Curtis, was. She said to the class, she said, "You know, you're not going out to play today. It's raining outside. I'm going to teach all of you a game." So she sent Jane Hamilton into the hallway, and she then said, "Let's take a beanbag and put it in one of the desks." And we all had desks that we're sitting at. We put it in one of the desks. And we called Jane in, and Miss Curtis said, "You're going to walk around, and we're going to tell you if you're getting near where it's hidden, you're getting warm. If you're not near it, you're cold. And if you're near, real close, you're very, very near to it." And she walked around and finally found it and what have you. And I was upset because I wanted to play this game. So when I walked home, my brother was 3 years younger. I walked to my grandparents' house. They were from Sicily, and they did not speak much English. I loved them dearly. I said, "Joe, go upstairs and hide this penny or this nickel in Grandma's house." Grandpa built it with his own hands. It was a two-story home. So he calls me and says, "I hid the penny upstairs." So I walk upstairs. Grandma doesn't know what's going on. Grandpa's at work, and I don't talk to my brother. And I'm roaming through the house. I end up in my uncle's bedroom, and I end up climbing on a chair because I was only in third grade. I was a kid. And I'm finding myself reaching behind the chair, and I felt the penny, and I'm now walking to the kitchen, and then it dawned on me. I forgot to tell my brother to talk to me. I forgot to tell my brother to give me hints. I forgot to tell him to say you're getting warmer, colder. I never spoke to him at all. It got around the family. I was started to be asked to perform in this way for private events, parties, and what have you. And by the time I was in junior high school, I was already getting paid $20, $30 for performances because I was already performing. So my career, now in all my shows, in my regular full evening shows, my check is hidden, if it's a full evening show, my check is hidden by a committee that part of them escort me from the theater, the rest stay inside the theater, and they hide my check somewhere within the theater, and I'm called back in. I ask no one any questions, no one speaks to me, but the agreement is if I fail to find my fee, literally in my own hands, I forfeit it. It will go back to the people who booked me, and it will go back to the people who booked the show, and the show will be done for free. I failed only 12 or 14 times in my entire life. Once lost $22,000 in a situation, but I failed only 12, 14 times. But one of the times, I wish there had been a camera there at that time, because it became a story that's been told so many instances. I was at a university. I've done about 5,000 universities in this country in Canada. And because it was a family weekend, they couldn't have it in the theater. They had it in the gymnasium because the gymnasium was large enough to have the students, to have the teachers, to have the everybody else as well. And now I'm outside the theater in the gymnasium. They hid my check anywhere in the gym. I come back in. I'm tripping over people's feet because they're sitting on the floor. They're sitting on bleachers and what have you. And I finally turned to this man. I said, sir, would you open your mouth? And I look in. There's no check. And I say, I apologize. I apologize deeply. Forgive me. I walk away from him. I walk towards the stage. And there was a committee of three or four that were had to hit the check. I said, let me have one of the rest of you. I want you to concentrate on what you did to hide. Just think. And now I'm walking through the audience. I suddenly freeze and I turn, and I'm facing the same man I faced before. I said, sir, if this embarrasses you, you'll sit down. I will forfeit my fee. Does this have to do with the roof of your mouth? I'll never forget this. He reached in his mouth, took out his upper plate, and handed me my check.
Wow. Wow.
I think I've gone overtime on you, haven't I, Greg?
You know what? We have a few minutes. Do you have a few minutes?
Sure. Yes, I do, but
okay.
I apologize.
No. I have some extra time if it's okay with you. I wanted to ask about this.
Yes, it is okay with me because I love working with you. And my life, we got to do this again because I enjoy sharing. And I will tomorrow night be announcing something that you'll want to follow up on. And that's that special event in which people are going to have the opportunity. But I suddenly thought, oh, my God, I've gone over time. I could talk to you.
Well, the truth is I have some more time, but I love what you say, and I caught this 2 weeks ago. Let this never be goodbye. Let's continue the conversation. That's brilliant. Where did you come up with that? And that's your signature piece, it seems like. Let's not say goodbye. Let's continue this conversation. How long have you been saying that, Kreskin?
Well, I've said it for years, and I've always ended by saying the goodbye. I got to learn what the definition of goodbye is, and it's kind of severing everything. And I did not want to feel that way because I wanted to be able to continue with my audience, even if I don't see them for another year or a month or what have you. So now I end it by saying I'm not going to say goodbye, but in the spirit of broadcasting, let's just say to be continued. And I think that has an essence of a feel. And my audiences, I love my audiences. I mean, I've had audiences of 8,000 people. I've had audiences of 2,000. And I've had private affairs and homes where there's been 50, 60, 80 people. And then I have to contend with this possibility of having an audience in a certain private setting. And one of the people who volunteers as a bandmate with the name Greg, oh, my God, I've got to figure out how am I going to handle the stress of that. Greg, I love to chuckle about things. I really do, Greg.
And you said this the other night in Connecticut. You said about the humor and how we need to laugh about ourselves and how much you love the country. Have you ever made claims of psychic abilities? I'm thinking no. I'm thinking that you say
no,
straight out you're an entertainer.
Yeah. No, I feel it's an intuitive gift of high sensitivity, but I've never made claims of psychability. I'm not knocking people who've made such claims. I respect their position and so on. But I have to look at this in a larger picture because can I share one more story with you that's happened to
yes.
me? It's all right.
Yes.
I had something happen to me a few years ago, and I cannot explain this. And I'm just not saying that I'm a psychic or whatever, because my abilities are high sensitivity, what have you. But I had this happen to me some years ago. I overslept, and this is not like me, and I don't oversleep. And that I woke up, it was late. I had to get to Newark Airport. My road manager was not with me that day or that week or what have you. So I took my car and drove and decided to take a shortcut. Stupidly, there was a shortcut, and it turns out I got lost in Newark. I finally got to the Newark airport. This is 20, 30 years ago. And in those days, you didn't have to go through much security. But I ran to the counter. They all knew me because I was booked there all the time, flying out of there, less out of the country, but flying out of there in those days. And they say, Kreskin, you better hurry. We'll take your luggage. You go on to the gate. And I ran to the gate. They took my luggage. I got to the gate in time to see the plane taxi out and take off. I never made the flight. I never made it. My luggage was on the flight, my clothes, my materials, and what have you. And I came back very disgusted with myself back to the counter because I don't miss flights like this. They knew what happened. They said, Kreskin, we did. We really shouldn't have let you run. We realized you had missed the flight, but we were going to get you a connecting flight to the same city, and you'll be able to connect to the town in which you're working. I said, thank you. And I finally flew out. I flew on to another town, got a connecting flight, and got to the city in which I was doing a private nightclub appearance, and they picked me up and drove me to the nightclub. That night, it's a full house, and I'm preparing to go on. I did not have my tuxedo. I didn't have my dress outfit that I wear when I go on stage, but that's fine, and the person's introducing me. And as I am being introduced, a door to my dressing room opens, and in walk two police. I say, gentlemen, is everything okay? They said, yes, Kreskin, we found out where you were staying. We knew, we called your home, the office. They told us where you were, and we thought we would bring to you your clothes and your attaché case and what have you. I said, oh, my God, thank you. Thank you. I missed the flight. They said, yes, Kreskin, you did. Had you made the flight, you would have never made it because the flight crashed in a cow pasture in New York State.
Wow.
Whatever made me miss a flight, whatever, there was no dream. I had no ominous feeling. I had nothing. It was innocent oversleeping. But I will never, it's the only flight I have ever missed in my life.
It's given me chills. I mean, yeah, there's something.
My life, Greg, has been an adventure. My life has been an incredible adventure. That's all. I have so much to be thankful for. That's all. And the good Lord has been so good to me.
Well, it's great to hear you say that. What advice would you give to someone starting out in show business, starting out, you know, in the industry of making a difference in people's life, doing it all these years? What would you say to them?
I want to say this. I say this to young people who come to see me perform and who have put Q&As after it. And once in a while, I will at universities do a special event where I meet with a group of maybe 50 or 60 people who want to get into show business and what have you. I want to say this to all of you, and listen to me. No matter what your gifts are, no matter how skillful you are and so forth, listen to your audience. Communicate with your audience. Hear what they have to say, and pay attention to them when your appearance is done, even if it's with a group of friends, even if it's in school and you're performing for a special night or what have you, even if you're with a little organization that you're a fan of and you're part of it. Listen to your audience and pay attention to their saying and hear what they have to say, because, Greg, we do not listen to each other as we once did. We don't do it anymore. You could ask people who are to teach in universities and say, we can't say this. Can you say it, Kreskin? Because a machine has interfered with our communication. It's a wonderful tool called a cell phone. But people have gotten so used to asking questions on a cell phone that they hear the answer instantly, put the phone down, and go on with their life. Years ago, when you looked up something that you were curious, you read about it, you asked about it, you read some materials about it, and you learned more about it. And that, and you asked, you got to ask people in school systems now, that's becoming less and less an activity. We're not hearing our inner thoughts or what we sense.
You know, I have to tell you something. I was talking to a friend of mine last night about 10 o'clock, and she said the exact words. And I said to her, what is on your mind? And she said, I just feel that people do not communicate and listen, and I'm not being heard, and people don't listen going either way. And while you're saying this, the hairs on the back of my neck is standing up, because it was a very profound conversation, Kreskin, last night, and so is this now. It's exactly,
you know,
what
I
you
have,
said.
I have to say to you, how many professional people say to me, Kreskin, you must admonish your audiences. And if you're with people that are interested in going into public communication, you must get this message across to them, because they say you have no idea how this is becoming more and more lost. And then they tell me situations in schools, in school settings and what have you, where the students really did not hear what was being said. Communication is one of the greatest gifts we have, and we do it by the way we look, the way we listen. And by the way, one more thing, and let me teach you this, folks. For God's sakes, do what people did years ago and should still do today. If you meet someone, you go out on a date. If you see someone you like, if you meet a person for the first time, you audition for a job, what have you. For God's sakes, when you finish with this and you finally get to yourself, if it's an hour later, 2 hours later, sit down in a damn chair and reflect upon that experience. I learn more in life by hearing what I remember people saying, because I remembered when I heard what they said to me, that as I thought about it, they said it in a slightly different way, so that that phrase meant something more to them. That's where we can learn.
Well, I will tell you, as I'm listening to you, and I'm very much listening to you, I'm having flashbacks of the first time I met you in 81, and then also here in Connecticut a few years ago, and then New York City, you were down there doing a show, and then 2 weeks ago, and then this conversation here. And I do believe reflection and sitting and contemplating is just powerful. So we only have about 5 minutes left. The last question I have for you, and I know you're not retiring. It's very clear.
No, that rumor has been passé.
Yes. So how do you want to be remembered? What is the legacy? I've seen the books. I've seen the career of all these years. And we only have 5 minutes. So, but what would you say?
I've written almost 21 books. And by the way, folks, you might get a kick out of this. It's a book called The Adventures of Little Billy. And The Adventures of Little Billy is by Barry Farber. And in the book, there are five objects. There's a tree, there's a plant, there's what have you. And he has these items talking to each other because he said, Kreskin, I learn from being around you. We can learn by just playing games and reading and reading and reading. Let them read about these items, this tree that talks to someone else and so forth, because maybe they'll learn to listen and feel sympathy and understanding for each other. And that's what The Adventures of Little Billy is about, except that the final character, which is a tree in Little Billy, is got a name. The name of that character is Kreskin. And as everyone that reviews the book says, you're searching for Kreskin, even though there's no dialogue. The dialogue is a tree talking to a branch, talking to something else, but there's a message of goodness and communication in that book.
Wow. And that's who you are, and that's who you are. So,
listen, my friend, yeah. let's be really. I look forward to talking to you in the not too distant future, and be the good Lord willing. It's going to be. I'll tell you some more incidents I have. The ones that I can tell, but that won't get me into prison. I'm only joking. I didn't go to prison. No, I didn't joke.
That's wonderful. So. I will say this. This has been the most memorable conversation I've ever had publicly on my podcast. I'm very grateful that I met you many, many years ago. I'm so glad that over the years I've seen you perform, and I have memories of you going up into the balcony, binding your check, and just being a delight to the audience. Yeah.
Well, Greg, let's not say
goodbye. We should just say let this continue, right?
To be continued, and we'll see each other before long. That I foresee, be the good Lord willing. Take care, Greg.
Thank you so much, amazing Kreskin. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, everybody.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show, brought to you by motivational speaker Greg Dwyer on buildingfortunesradio.com. Check out Greg at gregdwyer.com. Be sure to download his ebook at gregdwyerebook.com to stay focused on what matters most to you. That's www.gregdwyerebook.com. We want to thank you for listening. Now go make a difference in your world.